This is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, welcoming you to the February edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly live interview show, the second Monday of each month on WPKN 89.5 FM, bringing you news and information about the arts and culture across coastal Fairfield County, from Greenwich to Shelton. With more than 600 members, all the cultural institutions, organizations, and almost 300 individual artists, the Cultural Alliance is the connector, networker, promoter, and information hub for the arts and culture around our region. The Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County is one of nine such agencies, like the Arts Council of New Haven or the Cultural Alliance of Western Connecticut, that operate as agents for the Connecticut Office of the Arts, with whom we work on outreach, projects, and funding. But we don't operate only with the arts. The humanities are an important part of our constituency, too. And we also work with Connecticut Humanities, similarly on outreach, projects, and funding, and have many cultural organizations, such as historical societies, as members. And there, many events and exhibitions are well represented on our FC Buzz events area on our website. Today, we're looking at these cultural institutions that every town has, historical societies, and exploring how they embody the importance of history and of historical questions in the present, and perhaps more importantly, in the future. What is the future of history in our communities? My guests today are three new directors of three well-established historical societies. Darien, founded in 1953. At 66 years old, it's the baby here. And Westport and New Canaan societies, both founded in 1889, so both well into their second centuries. So I'd like to welcome, from the Darien Historical Society, Margaret McIntyre.
Welcome. Thank you, David.
From Westport, Ramin Ganeshram.
Thank you.
And from New Canaan Historical Society, Nancy Geary.
Thank you.
So let's start by asking when it was that you took on the leadership of these institutions and what attracted you to these positions.
I'll start.
Yeah. Yes.
So I started in September of 2017, and I had just always been really passionate about history. And when this position came up, I just kind of went after it.
Right, right. Yeah. So it's just been over a year for you. Ramin.
So I've been at Westport exactly a year. January 8th, 2018 was my beginning date.
Uh-huh.
What attracted me is that I'm a journalist by training. So research and history hews very closely to,
yes,
obviously, the interpretation, yep, of history in a historical society. So that's what attracted me.
And you are a Westport resident?
Actually, yes. I live around the corner from the Historical Society. Yes.
Right. And Nancy?
I joined the New Canaan Historical Society in April of 2017.
Uh-huh.
Part of what drew me there is that they had the same person in charge for 3 decades, and the board was really at a place where it wanted to examine what a historical society is and where it should be going. And so that opportunity,
perfect,
to be part, yeah, of the future conversation was what drew me there.
That's excellent. So none of you actual practicing historians, but very fascinated by history. And as you say, Ramin, journalism is close to what historians do.
Well, we hope it is, right?
Yeah.
Like, journalism done properly is about primary research and sourcing all material and a fact-based approach.
Right.
And that's what historical interpretation should be as well.
And I'd like to point out, my background is also in journalism, and just and at its basis, it's just telling a good story, and there are so many good stories locally, historically, especially in this area
that need to be told.
Exactly.
Yes. So let's get to know these organizations. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of your historical societies? We've heard when they were created. How were they created? Why were they originally created? And then maybe how they've evolved over the decades.
So, you go.
Westport Historical Society was actually very interestingly created. It was originally called the Saugatuck Historical Society. Saugatuck is a portion of Westport.
Right.
And it was citizens who wanted to preserve the town's history. And we are fortunate to have those original minutes and logbooks from that group. And what they did was they actually just got together and told stories, to your point, and read interesting essays and read pieces from history as a way to just kind of indulge their own interest and tell the story of the town.
So it was like a club?
It was a club, and it later became Westport Historical Society. And it's interesting because now we're going to restart something called Saugatuck Socials, which is almost like a moth-type open forum where people can tell stories the way the original founders of the society did.
And now, Saugatuck, is that the oldest part of Westport? Why Saugatuck?
Saugatuck is the port section of the town. It's actually not the oldest part. The oldest part is Green's Farms. But Saugatuck is where the railroad station is. It's where the river spills out into the harbor.
So especially in the 19th century, that was that the core
in the,
of the
Yes. In the 18th
town.
And 19th century, it was the core of the commerce of the town. So that was very much considered the heart of Westport, of downtown.
So how has it evolved, Ben? It evolved from a club, from a storytelling group. What would you say its characteristics are today as it has changed?
So, if I fairly spoken, I would say that like many historical societies, that club type feel remained constant through very recently. Not that it was a private club, but it was a very narrow focused institution, and it told a very narrow view of history. So in the last year, what we've been doing is working really hard to create a circumstance where more of the town, a greater demography of people, feel that their stories can be told in a holistic way, in an inclusive way, much more rigor when it comes to researching exhibits, much more creative in terms of storytelling. So that's how it's evolving for us. We're trying to be broadly focused in the way we portray the interpretation of history, right? History is history. You can't change it. But we want to be creative in the way we portray history.
Great. So clearly your journalistic background has influenced this approach.
Very much so.
What about Darianne?
The society was formed in 1953 in a person's living room, and there had been so many changes in the town over the last 50 years from that point that a group of citizens realized that they wanted to start preserving their history and telling their story. And then in the 60s, in 1964, the society, the Bates Schofield house was donated to the society, and they were able to move it across the street, relocated it, and that became kind of the facility, the headquarters of the society. And it's expanded since then. In 2009, the Bates Schofield, the Schofield barn was brought over and refurbished and made into an exhibit space.
And what did the group originally do? Was it also like a storytelling?
Yeah, pretty much. They realized that the past 50 years that Darianne was had changed so much.
You mean from 1900 to 1950?
Yes, it was becoming more of a suburban bedroom community, whereas before it was a more rural community, and the character of the town was changing, and they wanted to capture their past history and preserve it, and that's what our mission is.
That's great. And in New Canaan, Nancy?
The New Canaan Historical Society was founded. It was a group of people they incorporated in 1889. The original mission statement included that they were to collect curiosities. So it was to preserve the history, but it was also really from the get-go designed to be a museum and be amassing things as part of a permanent collection. It moved in for a while into the library. It was part of the library. A library donor had given a room that was to be the Historical Society. And then in the 50s, it moved, it purchased the Hanford Silliman House, which is sort of the flagship of the campus, a 1764 house on Owen Oak Ridge. And then it also later, the town hall, the original town hall, which is now our offices, is part of the campus as well. The other sort of interesting thing about the Historical Society is New Canaan obviously is very well known for the mid-century modern architects that built, designed and built houses there. And in the 50s and 60s, there was a modern house day tour to showcase these brand new beautiful buildings, beautiful homes that had been
organized by
built. By the Historical Society, actually organized by Elliot Noyes and some of the original architects to showcase what they had done. In 2001, the Historical Society restarted those tours, and a huge part of our support now are people that really, really love the mid-century modern architecture. So we have a little bit of a, I don't want to say bipolar, but two groups of people that come. One really cherish the old New Canaan history, and one group of people that are there because of all the work that the Historical Society does and continues to do in educating and promoting the mid-century modern architects.
I was going to ask you later about buildings, but this seemed to be a good place. I mean, the buildings seem to be, I mean, for you, doubly important. I mean, we think of the Historical Society perhaps as the building that it inhabits, although clearly you've each evolved and moved from one building to another. What do you think of how building-centric are you, and is that fine?
Well, we are very building-centric at this. That's where our exhibits are, our programs, and we're trying to draw people in. But it's also one of my missions is to get out into the society, to educate people about who we are and the incredible collections that we have. I feel like going out into the community is also part of that broader mission of getting more people involved. Mm.
I would say we have a very similar scenario. For Westport, it's a little bit different because just like these other institutions, our collections are housed in the building. Our galleries and our exhibit spaces are in the building. Unlike Darien and New Canaan, our building, though beautiful, it's an antique Victorian house, in and of itself does not have enormous historical value. Mm-hmm. It does in terms of architectural vernacular to the downtown, but in terms of things that may have happened there or the prominence of the individuals who lived there, not really, not in the truest historical perspective.
So it's a convenient space, useful space.
Sometimes it's not that convenient. That's an old house.
Okay.
But yes, it is our space and we make the best of it.
Right.
Well, we have sort of an unusual situation because we have 8 buildings.
Wow.
And so there, our campus has 5 museums plus the townhouse, which is our main exhibit space and our offices. We also have 3 properties off campus. We have the Gores Pavilion, which was designed by Landis Gores and built in 1960, that's in Irwin Park. We have the Little Red Schoolhouse, which is the last one-room schoolhouse that's on Carter Street. And we recently joined with the Selleck's Corners Chapel and Cemetery, and we now manage that old chapel and cemetery. So it's certainly a challenge because if you don't have a lot of staff and volunteers, managing properties that are not even nearby is hard. And one of my goals is to make it so that those properties can be more accessible to visitors. I mean, the Carter Street Schoolhouse is just a gem, but, you know, you have to make an appointment. We don't have somebody that's there all the time. And it's really one of these things where it would just be charming for school children or anybody to just be able to come in and see what life was like in a one-room schoolhouse.
Mm. Just a side note on your funding profile. I wondered, like, how many sources of funding do you have? Do you each have one regular, dependable funding source, or is it probably as a
I think we all wish
struggle.
We had more. We don't get any money from the town or from any federal or state agencies. We obviously apply for grants where relevant or applicable, but we're a membership organization, so we're supported by our donors.
So the town was never approached or has never
The town's been approached.
Yes.
The town has taken the view that this is a private organization. I mean, our response is that we're preserving town treasures. We're a library.
Yes.
We're open to everybody. Even if you're not a member, it's a really nominal fee to come and see everything and use the research materials and everything else. So we would love the town to support us. So far, that hasn't happened. But we are fortunate that we have some very generous donors and we have our members.
And what about the events? I mean, you have a number of big events each year, the house tour.
We sell tickets to those.
Yes.
You know, we do have fundraisers. We're having a big spring fundraiser. We have our Modern House Day Tour, which is every other year. Those are sort of events where we do sell tickets, and we hope that not only our members buy the tickets, but more people.
But they're not significant part of your fundraising.
They're significant part of the budget every year, but still most of our operating costs come from individual donations.
Yes. How about you, Ramin?
I would say that's an almost mirror image of our circumstance as well. We don't get any funding from the town of Westport or the state or the federal government. We do apply for grants. CT Humanities has been amazing in supporting us this past year, which has been wonderful. But what I've been trying to do in the last year is really try to create an environment where our town sees how valuable we are. So, for example, last New Year's Eve, the town-wide New Year's celebration was canceled. It's something that had gone on for 20-plus years. People were extremely disappointed. So we stepped in, and we took over, and we did a micro version of it for families so people could bring their kids. And it was incredibly well-received. So from our view, that is a service to the town, where
yes.
we stepped in and took over for the town. So we're hoping that the town increasingly sees us not as a private institution, but really an institution that serves the public in the same way that the town government does.
Right.
And eventually funds us.
Okay, well, the best of luck with that.
Thank you.
Well, I guess we're lucky because the town of Darien does support us with a grant every year, hopefully again this year. For the last 4 years, we've been getting a grant from the
town. So do you know how that happened?
I think actually it happened before I was
yes.
there, but there were, I think, some volunteers who were also involved in the town and encouraged us to apply.
Mm-hmm.
And also the bulk of our funding, though, is from a membership drive. But we also have some incredibly generous volunteers who kind of keep the lights on sometimes and really have been really supportive of the society in terms of, well, not only donations, but just very generous volunteers take care of the landscaping around the house, the facility as well. So it's people like that who are really helpful.
And what about membership? That you all have memberships, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a significant part of your funding, or?
You know, at Westport, it is and it isn't, right? It overall in percentages makes up the bulk of the funding, but like many organizations, not just historical societies, but art museums
yes.
and the like, we're seeing declining membership year over year, which is why it's so important to really expand the exhibits and programming to reach the widest variety of people. So it feels like there is a good reason to join because you'll be coming back often.
Right, right.
Yeah. And that's exactly what we're attempting to do as well, is increase our programming and our profile, get into the newspaper, get out to social media more so that draw more people in. So we feel like as soon as somebody can get through the door and they see our collections, they see our museum,
right.
they see our exhibits, they're going to want to be more involved
mm-hmm.
In the society.
Right. That's great. So if you're just joining us, this is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County with our February edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly live interview show on WPKN 89.5 FM. With me in the studio today are the new executive directors at three of our historical societies in the region, Margaret McIntyre at Darien Historical Society, Ramin Ganeshram from the Westport Historical Society, and Nancy Geary at New Canaan, exploring the future of history and the function of historical societies today and tomorrow in our region. So as you know, the Cultural Alliance, at the suggestion of you, Ramin, and you, Nancy, recently convened all of the historical societies in our region. We had 26 people representing 17 historical societies across our coastal Fairfield County region, Greenwich to Shelton. It's a pretty diverse group. 10 of them, just over half, had executive directors, and some of the others had some staff, but were almost completely run by volunteer boards. Were there challenges that you felt you all equally faced, or were the issues different for those totally dependent on volunteers? What do you think?
I actually thought that it was interesting to hear that regardless of how the historical societies were staffed or manned, the challenges were almost universally the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly bringing in new families, younger members, increasing membership, concerns for making exhibits and events more appealing to a larger community. People were all concerned about how to use social media in a productive way. I mean, I think it was, I enjoyed the group both because I felt like there's going to be a group of people now who really want to collaborate on solving these problems, and that we're not competitors. We're all in the same industry.
Absolutely.
Trying to do what's best for our towns.
Hmm.
And so I think with that group, with the energy that I felt in that group, that it was a really positive start to solving some of those problems.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, an issue that everybody faces, and it's the nature of a historical society, and collaboration, I think, is what will solve this, is that being that we represent our town history, there tends to be a very kind of historically, no pun intended, micro look at our roles and the stories that we're telling, when in actual fact, each of our towns is the stepping off point to a larger story. So in Westport,
I see what you mean.
You see, so in Westport, for example, our main exhibit is called Remembered, the History of African Americans in Westport. And it's really a way to tell the story not just of Westport's Black history, but the county, the state, the country, and the issues surrounding things around race and identity, right?
So actually, it's the kind of exhibit that really does invite conversation. Discussion
and that's
comparison.
Exactly, and that's our goal. And I think that each of us can do that. Mm. I think some of us, the ones who are less staffed, can work with those of us who are slightly better staffed to do that very thing. Because I think that's what we have to do. We focus on our towns as a way to tell a larger story. And I think that came out of our group, that if we work together, as Nancy has said, not as competitors, but as collaborators, we could serve the community at large better in this way.
That's what I definitely got out of that meeting as well. And I'm really looking forward to working with our neighbors here in Fairfield County to cross-promote and promote each other so that I think people from Westport or New Canaan would be interested to come to Darien because it is part of a larger story. And I also think so. I was always really very interested in history, and I would be running out to get, like, the first biography of George Washington or whatever. But what I really think needs to happen, and what I'm hoping will happen, is just like there's a locavore and a shop local movement, I'd really like to see a local history movement start so that people really delve into, especially this area. The history here is just fascinating, and I think as soon as more people start getting to know that, they'll be rushing out to get our our local history book. Mm-hmm. So that's my goal.
I mean, the one of the biggest challenges for us at the Cultural Alliance is to work on having the towns work together more effectively. And we often find a kind of siloed vision that our problems in this one town are our problems, not realizing that answers could be found if there was more conversation between towns. I know we had a program with economic development directors, and Tom Madden at Stanford said, well, Trumbull's problems are also my problems. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a remarkable and fairly fresh viewpoint that is increasing.
And also, I think it was mentioned at the meeting with the newspaper industry kind of...
Yes.
That you're filling such an important role because we need that countywide exchange of information. Mm-hmm. That doesn't... Like, I have the Ridgefield Press. I live in Ridgefield, but I'd love to know what's going on in Wilton and Darien. And it used to be that the Norwalk Hour would kind of cover... Darien and New Canaan every once in a while if there was a bigger story, but that's not happening anymore, and it's really affecting.
What about collaborations within your town? How do you work with other nonprofits or for-profits, for that matter?
So I've been really trying to co-sponsor a lot of programs, like with the Darien Library and the Darien Arts, because not only will they, it's just good to have town partnerships, but
right.
also they'll help get the word out with their membership database as well. And it's just another way of opening up the society and our programs.
And how has that been going?
It's been great. We just had a co-sponsored a program with the Darien Library. And the local bookstore, Barrett Bookstore, we've been co-sponsoring, and it's been really working out really well.
What were some examples?
Yesterday we had Nick Bellantoni, state archaeologist. He was promoting his new book, which is wonderful, by the way. and he was there, and we co-sponsored that with Barrett Bookstore, a local independent bookstore in Darien.
So clearly shared interests.
Yes.
There.
Yes. Yep.
Great. But this is pretty new. This kind of active collaboration with other nonprofits, as far as you
can
tell?
I think so. Mm. I think so.
How about in Westport?
So, over the last year, it's been new for us to do these collaborations, and they've been pretty successful. So, for example, we have a smaller exhibit installed now called Liberty to Set Down, Migrants and Immigrants in Westport, Connecticut. And that was in collaboration with the library's Westport Reads book, which is an immigration story called Exit West. And for the Martin Luther King Jr. celebration at Westport Country Playhouse, which was supposed to be in January but has a rain date now, March 10th, snow date, we are giving free tickets to the exhibit in every program. So everybody who comes to that free event at the Playhouse will also get a free ticket to Remembered, our African-American history exhibit. So these have been really wildly successful. I think the trick is to figure out how you can work together to expand the offering rather than just sort of pile on and jointly present an offering. So what can you bring to the table that your partner cannot bring to the table and vice versa, so the offering becomes bigger and better.
And everybody knows what their contribution is.
Yeah.
That's great. And I know about the New Canaan collaboration. It's incredible how you guys have been working together.
We have. It's been really a priority for me, and we were lucky that the Glass House felt the same way, and so they were on our Modern House Day tour.
Can you tell our audience a little more about the Glass House?
Well, the Glass House was Philip Johnson's home. It's now part of the National Trust. It's run by Greg Sages, who's their executive director, but it has an amazing staff of truly educated, passionate people about Philip Johnson and about the property. It is, if you haven't seen it, it's really a gem. It's multiple buildings. I mean, the Glass House is the Glass House, but then there's also an art studio and outdoor sculpture. And it's they were willing to be partners on the Modern House Day Tour, in part because I think Greg feels as strongly about cultural collaboration as I do, but also because we were putting together a symposium of international architects coming, and we were also going to show some other houses, including another Philip Johnson house in New Canaan. And so it fit nicely for them, too. And I understand exactly what you're saying. You need it to be that the sum of the parts is, or the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, I guess, mm-hmm. is the expression.
Yeah.
And that when you're thinking about collaboration, that's what it is. Is everyone benefits, and they're also benefiting the other.
You're also working with the library?
We're working with the library on a constitutional a speaker series around the Constitution. We were hoping to get a First Amendment scholar in. That hasn't happened yet, but that will be a lecture mm-hmm. series that will be 6 months. Lisa Oldham at the library is also fantastic and wonderful to work with, and mm-hmm. so we've been brainstorming about that for a little while.
And then the Carriage Barn, the Arts Center.
The Carriage Barn, Alan Goldberg, the architect Alan Goldberg, did a show with Michael Biondo that was called 50 Years of Modern Architects, and it was at the Carriage Barn, and we were... The Carriage Barn did his show, but we participated and set up house tours and mm-hmm. set up lecture series that happened at the Historical Society. So we certainly were a participant in that.
That's great. That's great. So all of you feel that this is a major sort of new direction to be going in.
But I think also more importantly is that if you're going to make your town a cultural destination, a historical society alone is probably not going to get you there.
Right.
And if you have multiple reasons for somebody to come, it's going to attract visitors.
And, you know, I think it's the right thing to do is to really present a more holistic view of arts and culture and society and history, not only for the people who live in the town, but for visitors as well. And none of us can do it alone, not a historical society, not a theater, not a library,
right.
but... together, you know, we're just made stronger together in promoting that, which I think is a real necessity for modern life, to have that really rich cultural life as well as, you know, other aspects of life.
So I'm just imagining more of a flow, if you like, between the different institutions rather than a sense of each institution in its own building with no... kind of play between them, and that seems to be part of the future here.
And actually, in our current WPA art exhibit, the Norwalk Historical Society was instrumental in helping us put that show together.
Excellent.
Because they actually loaned us work.
Uh-huh.
So there's not only the collaboration of how can everybody work together, but there's literally how can you help me or how can mm-hmm. I help you,
yeah.
and loaning collections to each other is very, very important.
Which, you know, I think what we need to point out for the listeners is that while art museums have always been great at this, loaning pieces of art to one
uh-huh.
another, historical societies really haven't. And, you know, that's something we're promoting as well. We have loans currently in the main exhibit from Norwalk, from Newtown. We have given loans to Lockwood Matthews, to Fairfield. We have loans from Fairfield, actually, Museum uh-huh. and History Center, which is not really traditionally the norm. And I think all of us are working really hard to make that happen. Because it's important.
Yeah, for a flag exhibit that we had last year, we wanted to borrow a couple artifacts from different institutions, and we had to fill out this facility report that was like 2 inches thick, but we did it, and we were successful, and we ended up getting a star from Pearl Harbor, a plane that was at Pearl
wow.
Harbor from the
uh-huh.
Morris Museum. And also from the Connecticut Historical Society, a state flag, which was really great. And so that's what we're all about, too.
Right. That's very interesting, because you'd think that... So the point there is that an object is not just an object telling a Westport story or a New Canaan story, but that it can also tell, to your point earlier, Ramin, it can tell other stories, or it can tell a story that many others can share and can use to develop their own... story. Now, one of the greatest challenges, it seems, for all arts and cultural organizations and institutions is how to reshape themselves or find new ways to effectively address and engage younger people, whether they be high schoolers or young families. I'm wondering whether you're developing new ways of specifically focusing on those audiences, the younger audiences, whether it be through schools or other means.
So we have a great group of education volunteers who bring in all of the town's third graders and take the fifth graders on a bus tour. And we're working on expanding our offerings to kids and then also just expanding programming and exhibits. We're going to be having like a World War I exhibit. We just closed another sculpture exhibit. We've kind of upped our exhibits so that we have something to offer. I mean, we've got the house museum. But
so each time you come, you're going to see something different.
Yes.
It's not going
exactly.
to be the same
exactly.
show. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So school kids come, and you work with the teachers?
The education volunteers do, yeah. They've got it. They work with the town schools, and they've built up this curriculum of then and now kind of thing. And they have a full-day field trip, all the town's third graders. And then also what I noticed when a 30-something would come through the door, it doesn't happen all that often. Well, it does with our programs, but not necessarily for the tours. But I asked them, where did you hear about this? Where have you seen us? And they all say Instagram. So we've been really trying to up our Instagram account and post a lot more often.
That's a good lesson to
learn. Yes.
And how is that going?
It's going okay. We just have to put more time into it. But we have an intern who's been really great from Sacred Heart University who's been helping us with that. And it's going pretty well.
So we're doing this in a couple of ways. So the first is that we're lucky that we have a staff programs director, Nicole Carpenter, who's amazing. And she creates classroom kits, among many other things, including programs around our exhibits. And she has a very tight relationship with Westport Schools to understand the curriculum, to figure out how our exhibits potentially fit into a curriculum. Now we're being more proactive when we think of our long-term exhibit schedule to think about things that will be appealing for curriculum. Not all the exhibits, right?
No.
But at least one or two of the exhibits at any given time marry at least a little bit with the curriculum. But the other thing that we're doing, including Instagram and social media, is that we're trying to create opportunities for kids to participate at their level, to meet them where they are. So we had a fundraiser last summer that was an oyster and champagne fundraiser. We had an amazing band that were all Staples High School students, and they were great. And so this was a way that we could take something that wasn't necessarily for kids, but give them an opportunity. And so that's what we're trying to do very heavily, is look at everything we do and say, is there a place where a young person or a younger person can fit organically, not kind of wedging a square peg into a round hole, but is there an opportunity that we just have to make a little bit of a change and it opens it up.
So it's an active part of your programming and thinking throughout.
We're doing much of the same thing, so I won't be repetitive. I think the one thing that's recently helped a lot is that we have a new younger board member who came out of running.
Congratulations!
I know, right?
An achievement, right?
Yeah. But she had been president of newcomers in town, and so she's put together something called the Young Patrons Committee. So they're not all board members; only she's the board member, but it's a group of her peers, and they're involved with the Young Women's League and newcomers, and so they're drawing on a different group, probably a group that didn't know the Historical Society existed. Two of them are running our Instagram now. We call them our social media directors, and they're fabulous volunteers, and they are also spearheading to redo the website. And I think, you know, the Historical Society didn't have an Instagram when I started there, and I have to confess my son set it up, so we were really behind.
Yeah.
But now that we have people that this is how they communicate regularly with their friends running it, they know how to post, they know how to do the hashtags, and it does make a huge difference when you see the number of people that are following or, you know, we'll see. Our spring benefit is going to be the first time that we've posted, you know, things about the benefit and with links to buy tickets. So we'll see if there's a direct correlation or not.
Right.
And I think these committees that allow younger residents, particularly people who have families, to come and be heard are important. So we are similarly starting, just in the beginning stages of starting, something called the Future Forward Council. The goal is the same thing, that while a board member or staff member will be sort of the main committee leader or chair, it will comprise people from the community that are not board members,
right,
but are hopefully members of the society, but maybe not, who can tell us what it is that they want and need out of an organization. So I think that's, you know, you kind of have to hear it right from the horse's mouth. You know, you can't guess. You have to really just get those people who can speak for their group and ask them.
So if you're joining us now, this is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County with our February edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly live interview show on WPKN 89.5 FM. With me in the studio today are Margaret McIntyre from the Darien Historical Society, Ramin Ganeshram from the Westport Historical Society, and Nancy Geary at the New Canaan Historical Society. Three new executive directors at three of our historical societies in the region, and we're exploring the role of historical societies today and tomorrow in our region. So we mentioned with Instagram as being an important new outlet. Do you feel the digital arena, whether it be websites, the digitization of collections, having a presence on social media, is a major new area for you to engage on? Do you have staff and volunteers, say, in their 20s to give their input? You have actually mentioned
we do have, we don't have staff to do it, but we have these great volunteers, and I think it's key. I mean, in my dream world, the entire collections would be digitized so people could see what was there and decide, you know, oh, they have such an incredible dress from 1855, maybe I'll go and see it. Right now, we have very little that's digitized from our collection, so that's also a priority. I think the reality is that there's so much choice for people right now. There's so little time and so much choice that if you can't reach people, they're not going to know that you're there. And you could have the best exhibit in the world, but if the news of it doesn't get out, nobody's going to come.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And we're in the process of and I'm sure you are as well, something joining Collective Access Connecticut Collections, which is a program to digitize our collections in as much as it allows researchers, both scholarly and just lay people, to understand what we have, as Nancy said, so that maybe it draws them into the society. But for us also, we're thinking about digitization and technology as a way to present our material in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. So we're doing an exhibit, online exhibit platform, which while an exhibit is up, is supplementary to the exhibit, but when the exhibit comes down, the whole exhibit goes up online. So that way, if you didn't get to come and see an exhibit, but in your research you say, oh gosh, I wish I had seen that because I'm interested in that topic or could help me with something, it's now online. It doesn't go away.
Has that started? Have you started?
We've started it. So with our current exhibit, Liberty to Set Down, we actually have supplementary information on the QZM platform, which anyone can access, QZM, and then it's Westport History. And you can see the supplemental material. And we hope that when you see that, you say, oh, gosh, I want to come and see the actual exhibit and other things. And when Remembered comes down, the entire exhibit will go up on the QZM platform.
Could you tell us a sentence or two about QZM? I did actually meet
the
salesman there.
QZM is a digital platform that you can either launch as an app, based platform, or a web-based platform. And there's arguments in favor of both. Some people are willing to download endless apps on their phone and then launch it, and some people like me do not want to do that, right? So what we do is we provide iPhones or iPads, or a patron can use their own device, and it can be a non-Apple-based device as well, to go through the exhibit, and it's all there, and there are are stations and stops. You press them, and another image might launch, a video, audio. I mean, it's really kind of endless in how much you can enhance the experience. So, as I said, we're using it supplementarily until an exhibit comes down.
So it's a vehicle. You still digitize the objects and
yes.
provide the metadata yourself.
Exactly. So, yeah, but it's quite easy to use.
And so another thing that struck me was, so are you basically using the opportunity of an exhibit then to digitize the elements inside the exhibit? It's
right.
A kind of a...
Exactly. So we're doing two things. There's the ongoing digitization of the archives that is just kind of just going on and going on. Mm-hmm. But every time we install an exhibit, we photograph... We use the opportunity. We photograph the object or we scan it. We do whatever we have to do.
Yes.
We create all the metadata and we do it for this platform. But I have to say we were doing that even before we started Qzeum. When I took over, that just became sort of one of our mandates mm-hmm. that as soon as it comes out and you have it, take
right.
a picture of it or scan it
right.
or do whatever you have to do.
Right. That's yeah. great.
So we've had just a core group of volunteers who have been really wonderful. It consistently amazes me since I've been at the Darien Historical Society how much one person can really make a difference. So one volunteer started a few years ago scanning all of our photos into our Past Perfect. She would come in every week after week. Another volunteer just works on our website. And she's not even on the board anymore, but she's still involved in helping us, make our website look professional, and it looks fantastic. So, and we also have had the board president is he's an expert in guest experience, thank goodness, I mean, and has just been giving a lot, like changing like the brand and working with different people to do that. So it's been really great.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Would you say, I know that there are several Connecticut digital collections, would you say that there was a need for greater sort of community discussion about the possibilities of digitization for historical societies across the county? Or are you... pretty much on a good road yourself.
I think that there needs to be more discussion, particularly around understanding that as historical societies digitize their collections, that is supporting material to libraries, right? So when you go to the library and you're accustomed to using a digital catalog to finding what you want, people are used to that.
Right.
But they tend to think of it within the confines of the library system.
Right.
We could support that greatly if we were digitized. So I think that aspect of it has to be discussed more, and that's collaboration again.
I know just from a story that the Barnum Museum was talking about here in Bridgeport about they got a grant from the NEH to digitize their collection, and in the process of doing the research, they found that the Bridgeport Library had an immense collection of Barnum material that they had never known about before. And by partnering with them and by being digitizing them together, they were now able to make many single objects that much more eloquent because they had partners. There was a greater context for them. And I would say that was one of the greatest potential for digitization is to free an object or a document up and enable it to relate to other items in other collections. And making your own collection that much more valuable and useful.
Exactly.
That's true. We actually found the flag that was at the Connecticut Historical Society. We found it from their digital collection. You could go through it, and all the explanation was there
yes.
and everything. So
yeah.
that was really helpful.
Right.
And it would be great to have more support.
But I also think it's really important with the digitalization is it's going to increase curiosity about what you can learn. Uh-huh. That we have the News Bank, the organization, gave us a set of the New Canaan advertisers digitized. Mm-hmm. And people come in literally just for fun. They want to find out what happened 50 years ago today. They want to find out about something that happened in their school, you know, 40 uh-huh. years ago. And I just think it makes it it such a nice tool. And it's a way to just broaden your experience. It doesn't even have to be part of an exhibit or anything else. It's just that's what historical societies are for. They're for the curious to come and mm-hmm. learn. And I think that any kind of digital system is just so much more efficient and easier. You don't need staff to help you. You can just sit at the computer and find what you want.
You know, Nancy, you have Instagram posts for days with that newspaper. This day in 1923, yeah. right? You could just take a picture of the front page of the paper.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. We just have a couple of minutes left. I'm wondering if you could say what your sense of the future of history is in our communities. We hear a lot about the death of the humanities and how humanities are not doing so well in many institutions of higher education. How can historical societies show the importance and relevance of history in our lives and in civic life today?
What I'd say really quickly is that we are in an exciting time in American history where we're trying to explore truths of history and unearthing stories that haven't been told for various reasons, mm-hmm. and stories of identity and inclusivity. And I think that we at historical societies are really poised to tell that story well because we have collections and we have material that has been hidden, and we can bring it forward to really tell an expansive story. And I think that's really exciting.
The same. I think that when I first got at the Historical Society, every day I was discovering something new that was totally blowing me away. In one drawer in our archive, Common Sense. So that's what we're working to share, the treasures of the society with the broader public. And I think that that's going to go a long way in helping people get more excited about it.
I would just also add that one of the things is the future of historical societies is because the people today are going to be history tomorrow. And so there needs to be a way to make the community realize that this isn't necessarily all about what's happened 200 years ago. We can learn from what happened 200 years ago, but it's also about the people living today that will be the basis for the town's history tomorrow.
Well, you've managed to make me excited about the future of all of your institutions. So thank you so much for being on our program today. This has been the February edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, the monthly interview show from the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, broadcast live the second Monday of each month on WPKN 89.5 FM. I want to thank our guest today, Ramin Ganeshram from the Westport Historical Society, Nancy Geary with the New Canaan Historical Society, and Margaret McIntyre at the Darien Historical Society for coming into the studio today to talk about the future of history in our communities. If you missed part of the broadcast or just want to hear it again, you can hear the show on WPKN Podcasts on SoundCloud. I'm David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County. Please tune in Monday, March the 11th, when we will be speaking with the new executive director of the Aldridge Art Museum, Sibel Malone, on the next edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture.